All right, let's start with approval of the agenda. Any questions? No questions, we move forward. Approval of the minutes, do I have a motion to approve the minutes? So moved and seconded, all in favor say aye. Minutes are approved. And now we will hear from Nat regarding approval of connection agreements policy.
So we're here today requesting approval of a revised policy. Metro's had in place a series of policies starting in 1969 that establishes how we charge, how we connect directly to commercial and government properties. Let me just take a moment to define what the connection is. It is a direct connection from a, not a public space, but from a government property or a commercial property into our system. So not via a public roadway, not via a sidewalk, but directly into a mezzanine, into the system. That is the connection. The connection fee that we're talking about is a fee charged by Metro as to reflect its share or to capture its share of the value created to either the government entity or the commercial entity for the direct connection. A direct connection confers a competitive advantage in terms of hiring and in other ways and increases real estate value or increases government value, and the connection fee is for that value created. It is distinct from the costs that a government or a commercial entity would have to pay in order to build and maintain such a connection, and it's distinct from any fees that might be charged by Metro to review documents, review construction documents, and oversee construction. So that is what we mean by connection and by connection fee. The reason we're asking for the timing of this is motivated by issues that have come up related to the relationship of the adult stations in the Tyson's Corner area to private projects there. And what we realized was that the connection policies that we had in place really didn't give us clear guidance on how we should be relating to those entities. In the update that relates to, the two aspects of the policy in front of you, one is government connections and one is commercial. We can just flip forward. Government connections has not changed since the last time, so I won't dwell on that. But I move forward to the commercial connection. And the key issues that really are, I think, we're more sensitive to now than we were in 1995 were the questions of did the owners of property who are seeking a connection to Metro contribute to the funding of the system, and are the connections that are being sought consistent with transit-oriented development principles. And so the significant addition to the policy now is a clarification that while we still will be able to negotiate connection fees on a case-by-case basis, we really will only seek to apply them in situations where we think that the direct connection sought might not be consistent with a TOD principle and where the private property owner really has not contributed to the funding of the transit infrastructure. And those are both distinctions from the development in the Tyson's Corner area where landowners in that area actually have made substantial contributions to the construction of the Dulles extension. And also there has been a very vigorous attempt to replan Tyson's Corner area in a much more transit-oriented format.
Can I just get a clarification on that point? When you say that Metro will not seek connection fees, I just want to clarify, and I assume you mean that we will continue to ask for reimbursement for all of our costs.
That's correct.
That we will simply, what we're saying we will not ask for is we will not ask for additional fees over and above what our costs are to make this connection.
It would continue to be the responsibility of the party seeking a connection to pay for the connection, to maintain it, and pay for any operating costs that would be necessary for maintaining that, and to also pay for any construction document reviews and construction oversight. Those things we would continue to ask them to pay.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, one other clarification. In the second part about a manner inconsistent with transit-oriented development, we would be looking for fees in that circumstance, or, of course, we could just outright deny the connection.
That's also a possibility, correct.
Okay.
And so there are two other significant aspects of the policy that we've recommended. The first is we do want to keep track of the value that's being created to these private entities. I think we want to continue to reinforce the notion that that as an agency, one of our roles is to create value in the region, and we want to keep better track of that. And so we want to use economic analysis tools to keep track of the additional value we're creating due to transit proximity. We'll be communicating that to local jurisdictions, and just so there's a running tab on the value that's created. That's sort of a substitute, is sort of an accounting substitute for charging fees. And then the other aspect of this is that we'll be communicating the policy, assuming it's adopted by the board, to all the development review organizations in the region, and also setting up meetings with them so they understand how this would be applied in future and to understand what our fee framework is.
Mr. Giancola?
Yes, a question on the second bullet, the second line. That seems like an incomplete sentence. What are we trying to say there?
I'm sorry, on this slide on the page.
On the second bullet, second line. Metro may incur or fees. What is
that metro? It should be that metro may incur.
Oh, that
or fees to operate. And this is the point that Ms. Porter just asked about. We're saying that the private property owner is responsible
for.
Okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
I just thought they were separate sentences, but I guess they're
right.
All right. Thank you.
So our recommendation is that the board approve the revisions I've described. That's my presentation.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Hines?
I am in general agreement with our approach on the connection fees or connection charges. I do want to raise another issue, and I alerted the board to this by email earlier this week. If you go to the resolution and you look at the second resolve, which begins on page 16 of 19, both in item number 3 and item number 4, we establish a ceiling price that we will waive for staff review of these projects. And I will say my jurisdiction is in the process of installing 3 high-speed elevators at the Roslyn station. That is, it's an Arlington project. It uses some of our community benefit money from a large building that's going to be built above the Roslyn station. In addition, the developer has agreed to improve the ADA access from one street into the station using a jump elevator that will also serve their building. So we've got 2 different projects going on, one Arlington funded, another one a developer funded. My concern, and right now our costs for Metro review to make sure that all of this is compliant with our system specs and stuff is approaching $200,000. The question I think before the board is, the way this is written, I think, establishes a ceiling of what will be forgiven in review. May include direct and indirect costs. I'm not entirely sure. This is a large project. So as a percent of the project, the $50,000 is pretty small. One of the questions, I think, for us moving forward is, since we have a policy that basically says jurisdictions are the lead in deciding where we do these kinds of enhancements, and they must be compliant, is does the board want more flexibility in how much of the Metro review cost might be forgiven as opposed to moved onto the jurisdictional dime? I don't know what the right answer is. I just know that this $50,000 limit in the context of what we are doing in Arlington doesn't feel appropriate given the incredible value that's going to be added to the system. We're adding a new mezzanine entrance and new fare gates and these high-speed elevators and replacing some escalators with stairs to improve access, so as well as the jump elevator the developer is going to be providing. So I don't quite know what to do. I think this is a real and important issue. I think we need to move forward to provide clarity at Tyson's, but I am most uncomfortable setting an upper limit on this without more study and consideration by the board.
Thank you, Ms. Hines. I looked over that and really could not really come to a conclusion of what principle best applies. I would like to hear from any other board members, especially any other board members that are involved in some of these decisions that had to have been made in the past regarding similar issues on who bears the cost to Metro. And is it always shared, or should there be a cap when Metro engages in this? Any other board member have any thoughts or opinions on that? What about Metro? Right. I mean, the question kind of goes to a basic principle that should the full cost, should there be, I mean, what is the principle of having a cap? And as soon as we agree on what the principle is of having a cap, then that kind of informs us of potentially of, you know, kind of where should we put the cap?
I was just going to suggest instead that maybe we look at language similar to what Nat just explained as the deciding factor. The exact dollar amount, I mean, this is in today's dollars, too.
Yeah.
And this is something that we're going to pass that is going to have to stand the test of time. I don't know what, you know, magic was used for the number, but I think it would be better to explain the process under which Metro staff will evaluate the credits to local jurisdictions rather than an arbitrary number, because I think the explanation that was just given was helpful, and I think there's more to it than that. Maybe that's what needs to be in the resolution for clarity rather than an exact dollar amount.
I think that trying to remain with the consistency of how we've developed this policy now, and that is the capture. And capture for the jurisdiction may not be just the economics, but the influence of encouraging the right kind of appropriate development and connections to the station in order to impact name it operation maintenance as well as delivery services. So I think that I guess when after I thought about it and after Ms. Hines raised it, I think it's cost and the other, that it's not just putting in a set of stairs or whatever, but does that continue to create the value that we talked about, and we're able to capture that in some way. And I don't know if there's language that
I think you're right. When you get into how do you capture the value, also what you're kind of getting at are principal aspects,
right,
such as, you know, when you think about improvements and really looking at the specifics, does it open to a street or does it open into a building? Was this established as a reimbursable project? Or, you know, generally when we do station improvements, how to evaluate, is this a regional, you know, benefit versus a local benefit? Like, as we deal with Union Station, it really does kind of trigger some of those issues of how we go forward, and it really does argue more for some principles to be evaluated against or standards rather than any type of monetary cap. So clearly we're not ready to go forward on this policy yet, but what is the impact of us not adopting this policy yet, unless someone's ready for language? But it sounds like guiding principles need to be generated on how you evaluate these projects.
Do analysis of, for example, what the which is the development review cost.
Yes.
That's what's going on right now, and those are the costs that we're incurring as part of our role of overseeing a project that's being managed by another party, Huntington County, is managing the work in development review, project review role, and is a political project.
Explain to everyone what a reimbursable project means.
A jurisdictional reimbursable project is a project that is paid for by the sponsoring jurisdiction rather than out of Metro's operations generally. So the second entrance of the injury, for example, is a jurisdictional reimbursable project that the U.S. station is paid for by the jurisdiction they are. We're policy right now is that the jurisdiction bears all the costs of taking that addition to the system. That's a reimbursable project. It's a very related but separate idea from the government connections we are now. More like the IRS is connecting to the new town right now. So the IRS owns and maintains bridge that lands on our property. So it is a proprietary connection to the IRS, so they control access to it. So you see where these things would be very similar.
Just to answer directly the question of how this is funded, we negotiated with the developer a significant contribution, several million dollars, and required them to accommodate these three high-speed elevators in the design of their building in order to facilitate speeding up the entry and creating a second entrance at Roslyn, which I would remind everybody is a major bus hub as well as where the orange and blue lines come together. I mean, to me, some of the criteria has to be how many people are passing through from how many different modes that moves it from being like Virginia Square, where I would argue, you know, it should be a minimal amount of forgiveness as opposed to a regional hub. Union Station's another one that comes to mind, Gallery Place, where lots of stuff comes together to make it possible for multiple people.
And if possible, I think that our staff need bright lines, as close as we can get to bright lines. Otherwise, they will be making policy every time there's a decision. So I'm sensitive or kind of sympathetic of why they try to come up with a cap, but it doesn't seem like that would really get it, as Mr. McKay notes, that that's very time-specific. Mr. McKay, you had your hand up?
I was just going to clarify. I mean, we really, this is a connection policy, but it's really two pieces. One, what happens when a government entity is involved, and two, what happens when you're dealing with a private developer? To address the issue of timing, I think the private developer piece, there is a great sense of urgency. They've been working on this for a very long time. I don't hear a dispute necessarily with the way in which we're handling those, where they pick up those costs. I think the question is, how do you deal with jurisdictions, compact jurisdictions, and dealing with connections? And so I only raise that question because from a timing standpoint, is there a way to divorce the two and then remarry them later so that the folks who have been waiting at least on clarity on the private developer piece of this can move forward with that clarity while we work out, you know, what would be the criteria for determining the expenses that we might waive to a government entity.
Yeah, I think there's a little clarification needed here. This connection fee policy does not apply to the Roslyn project. That's a reimbursable project. It's a different policy. As Nat pointed out before, it would apply to something like the IRS coming in. Federal government wants, and they have an office building, they want to make a direct connection. So it's not the broader question that you're talking about. It's applying a similar policy to a government entity like the IRS or some other government entity. We do it in a little different fashion than a commercial entity. So it's a much narrower area that we're dealing with, similar but much narrower. It would not apply to Roslyn. It would not apply to a jurisdiction coming in and wanting to add another entrance to a station or something like that. Those are not when the jurisdiction wants to do it, those are not covered by this connection fee policy.
And that's because it's a reimbursable?
It's a separate reimburse. it's a separate board policy with regard to reimbursable projects. And I think, and you know, we've had a little bit of that discussion where the board may want to revisit how we define when a jurisdiction picks up the bill for an improvement versus the region picking up the bill, all jurisdictions picking up. I think that's a broader question. And certainly, we can come back to you with suggested ways of approaching that and principles, but I think that's different than this connection fee policy.
Yes, one question. Thank you. That's helpful. And I think you clarified again for me what it's not. But would you just, and I hate to be redundant, just one second, give me an example of where, of how the policy, a specific example where the policy would apply and how it would apply.
Government action?
As it relates to the policy that we are contemplating here, give me an example of how the application would arise and how it would apply.
We are the only one.
The only one that comes to mind is the New Carrollton connection, and the way that would be apply would be. The policy gives us latitude, you know, sort of as appropriate language, and I frankly don't recall what the fee arrangement was with the IRS. I don't have a record of any ongoing fees, so in my records of this connection, so I'm assuming that we did not charge a connection fee in that case, and so we basically judged at that point that, you know, as long as they paid the construction costs and it was, you know, we were comfortable with it, we weren't going to charge it for the connection to our property. Okay. There could have been situations where we would have applied a fee, but again, there's a lot of latitude on the government side, and I think it's actually because there's so many more relationships between us and public entities in the region than there are between us and commercial entities. I mean, commercial entity is, you know, that's a private interest, it's separate from us, whereas, you know, they're compact members. There's sub jurisdictions of compact members. There are, this is the federal government, which, you know, has another status. So it wasn't possible, I don't think, in the policy to be prescriptive for that.
Let me ask the question in a different way.
Let me try.
Go ahead.
Government wants to come in and build a office building.
Right.
And they want a direct connection to our station.
Right.
This policy then applies.
So prospectively, though, let's continue on New Carrollton, for example.
Can I give you just a flip of that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Flip of that. Maryland comes in, and they want to add a second entrance, which is open to the public. That's not the connection fee policy. That gets into
a reimbursable project.
So let's think of it in this context. Prospectively, New Carrollton is going through a development plan right now. Under what circumstances would this policy impact, influence, or otherwise engage with the outcome of that development plan?
It wouldn't really apply because it would be subsumed by the joint development guidelines in the way that we handle that. So, I mean, this is a disposition of a property to, you know, somebody else, and when we value the property as part of the disposition, the connection to Metro would be part of the whole valuing package.
There will be a development plan. There will be a set of stuff that's negotiated as part of that, and it will include the connections, and this is not a specific policy that would influence how those are negotiated.
Right.
Whereas, that would be the subsequent policy that we're talking about discussing that would provide a context for how we view connections in general and guidance. Correct? That's another policy that will be taken down the road, right?
That was a lot of information.
Different policies. Okay.
Can I ask for a clarification? I thought I understood this, but now after all the clarifications, I think perhaps I don't. Is the distinction we're making here between a reimbursable and a non-reimbursable project, or is the distinction we're making here between a connection fee and some other thing that you do in a station?
With this, with, and I'll let Matt correct me, but what we're talking about here is when an entity wants to make a direct connection from their facility into our station. Then, depending on whether it's a government entity or a commercial entity, we treat it according to this policy. But that's a direct connection to the station. If it's part of a development plan around the station, there's, you know, buildings going to be built, you know, other facilities going to be built, and there's maybe a new entrance, but it's not a direct connection to that office building, then this does not cover it. That's part of the plan for that area. It's part of the whole negotiation.
So if there were a reimbursable project, and this is, I can't think of an example, but if there were a reimbursable project that consisted solely of a connection, this would apply.
If the reimbursable project is like something like an office building that you're going to have people connecting over to it, then this would apply. Again, we're combining two things. A reimbursable project by itself subsumes everything else. You've negotiated, you've decided as a board that the jurisdiction wants to do a project, and they want a connection as part of that. The board may decide if that's a reimbursable project, you know, then it's covered under that policy. If an entity comes in and says, I want to make just a direct connection from my office building to here, that would be covered by a connection fee policy.
But that would be a commercial entity.
Well, it could be either, government or commercial.
Okay. So and I'm totally making this up. This is just an example. So supposing the Silver Spring station decides Colesville is too dangerous for people to cross, we're going to build a bridge across Colesville going right into the station. And that's all they're going to build. And I'm not suggesting they're going to do this. I made this up. But that would be considered a connection, but it would be a government reimbursable.
Not necessarily. Okay. If all you're doing is a pedestrian bridge from the sidewalk, basically, a public area, over the street to the station, that's a reimbursable project.
Okay.
Just to try to clarify or maybe confuse, I don't know. If instead of that, there was a office building there, and you wanted to build a connection directly from the lobby of that office building, not to the public area, but the lobby of the office building, into the station, that would get covered under connection fee policy.
And just to, you know, I mean, I'll talk about Prince George's County just to go a couple things. So Branch Avenue is an Archstone apartment building project on the far side of our parking lot from the station entrance. The most direct route for pedestrians from that project to our station entrance is across our parking lot. The revision of this as proposed would mean that we would not charge a connection fee there because for opening the fence to allow a direct connection from the Archstone property onto our property, because that's consistent with transit-oriented development principles, is providing the shortest possible walk for pedestrians in a station area. The alternative for that would have been to let them walk out onto the public right-of-way, go out of their way on a public sidewalk and come into our station, which is, you know, making people go out of their way is not consistent. At Largo, for example, there's property immediately adjacent to our station that has been proposed for, I think was bid for the HHS contract. If they were to be awarded the contract, for example, if their property was directly adjacent to ours and they wanted a connection in, we would evaluate that per the connection policy. And we would probably end up with a similar judgment as what I just described at Branch Avenue. The shortest walk from this major employment concentration to our station would be a direct connection, and that would be consistent with TOD principles. I'll just give a third illustration. It would be covered by this policy. It would be a government connection, not a private connection, and it would be also we would use the latitude in this, and I think the direction that we would infer from this action to not apply a connection fee, because that would be consistent with DOD principles.
And remembering that connection fee that we're talking about is the capture part of the
right.
value
right.
that accrues to that piece of property due to the direct connection. But if they're one of the underlying principles here is that they're following TOD principles and everything else, the board is trying to encourage that.
Right.
So you're not going to try to capture that value.
And then this,
through the, I think, philosophically, we're moving toward a place, and we've had a lot of discussions around this, around the broader principles of what we're trying to encourage in terms of regional growth, in terms of transit-oriented development, and at the same time, but not leaving value on the table that reasonably should accrue to the agency. And so I'm just trying to sort and make sure that I understand exactly how this would apply in what circumstances, and so that we don't.
And just the third piece, because you asked about joint development, and the distinction there, and I think the general manager captured it very well, is the two instances I've just described are development projects on land adjacent to ours.
Right.
But in the joint development project, we're talking about development of our land. And so if we have a 99-year lease for somebody, they're developing on our land, and the valuation of that lease would, you know, if it had a direct connection, the value of the direct connection would just be rolled into the overall valuation of that long-term lease. Or alternatively, we might create a public network of streets so that people just come out on the sidewalk and come in. But I mean, it would not be a separate connection fee for applied to any project that was part of a joint development program.
Okay, I guess just one follow-on question related to that. I mean, our policy itself and the application of that policy is not in isolation. I mean, presumably, to the extent that anyone is going to connect direct from Branch Avenue or Rockville or wherever else, they're going through a development review process within that local jurisdiction that at the outcome says that it supports the overall development vision for that region. And I particularly, I raise the question because there are instances where a direct connect might be viewed and analyzed as advantageous, as transit friendly, as economically friendly, and there are other situations where that direct connect, frankly, might choke off economic development, put people in a tunnel and take them from one facility that's closed to another one that's closed, and really devalue the asset that we have leveraged through our connection.
Right.
But
exactly.
We in isolation won't be making those decisions. That'll be in the context of an overall community decision that says this is a good thing or a bad thing.
Exactly. And,
okay.
and also just as part of that whole cooperation is that's why we make available to the jurisdiction or town or whatever that's negotiating that, the value that's being added to the property by having that direct connection. So they can take that into account when they're negotiating with the developer.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hines.
Having started this, thanks a lot. I do appreciate all the conversation, and I'm struggling because I absolutely get the place we're trying to get to, but I'm still a little stuck on when the jurisdiction has negotiated something that we all view as good and adds value to the system, how we think about Metro's role with the jurisdiction. And so here is my suggestion of how we change this resolution and then what we ask staff to come back with. I would suggest in the resolved question on the second resolved on page 16 that in front of government connections, we put non-jurisdictional. Jurisdictional has a definite definition. It's those of us sitting at the table who are players. Says other, you know, federal, state, you know, that this applies to all of that. And we ask you to come back particularly on this issue of the fees that would be charged to those of us and the impact on jurisdictional subsidy in more detail so we could understand it. And maybe we would, in the end, remove non-jurisdictional from this and say, yeah, we're all going this way. But at least we give ourselves a little bit of space to have them do some more investigation on this. To me, and I understand the distinction between, or maybe not, between reimbursable and these other kinds of projects. In some ways, that actually doesn't matter to me, how it's paid for. What matters to me is, are we ending up creating an incredible value that if we had to stick it in our capital plan, in order to move the people through that station, we would all be paying for it. But we're stepping, one jurisdiction stepping up and saying, this is really important. We're going to figure out how to pay for it, whether with developer money or our own local money, and we're going to give it to Metro. And so it's not something we're all paying for. And the only part we're being asked to consider paying for is what our piece of that oversight is to make sure it's compliant. I think we really should struggle a little bit longer with that particular question, but I'm very mindful of the fact that we got a lot of people out there worrying about what we're doing at, on the Dulles line relative to connection fees, and I don't want to hang that up on this today.
Sure. Martin?
I think I'd be troubled by a distinction between federally sponsored development and jurisdictionally sponsored development. I'd hate to have to justify to an entity that's giving us hundreds of millions of dollars a year that we also want to get them up for 5,000 or 50,000 or whatever. I think it should be applicable across the board to government, either all of them or none of them, but not a distinction.
Ms. Hudgens?
I think Mrs. Hines is trying to find a solution, which I hope is going to keep us moving, but also help us make the change that I think we're trying to make. And we're trying to say that we want to overtly acknowledge that Metro brings an opportunity of economic value that should be captured in the relationship of connections and improvements that will occur by jurisdictions or non-jurisdictional governments or private. And I think I think I would like to see if we could accept her proposed change so that we can come back and look at this. Because I think what we've had a discussion on today is reimbursable versus non-reimbursable. How are we going to handle that? And I think we might be able to come to the correct language if we can come back to do this, because I think where it stands right now, I'm rather stuck in, for example, I don't think it's completely okay to say non-jurisdictional. I really
maybe
do.
Maybe we should take that section out. Just take that whole resolve.
We think we can. I'm concerned.
Mr. Acosta? But before, Marcel, before you go, we have a general counsel has something to say.
I'd like to make a suggestion that might help. What the board is struggling with are policies that are not developed in contemplation of each other. The direct connection was a species, as Mr. Boddingham and Mr. Charles have said, of adjacent construction. And that policy predated considerably the reimbursable project concept, as well as a lot of our joint development. And the concept was, well, if one of our jurisdictional entities has a project that's adjacent, even though we have all this staff time, and for a private party, we will charge them all of that staff time. For our jurisdictional entities, we'll give them a $50,000 credit. But that was not considered in the context of the whole joint development and reimbursable project concept. What I think board wants to move forward, it might be easier simply to take the credit out and come back to the policy that considers the entirety of this matter. Because if you put the non-jurisdictional in, as I thought I was saying, then you'd be giving a credit for governmental entities that are not jurisdictional parties, but not for ones that are. And that, maybe I didn't understand what you're
saying. I meant the opposite.
but it's a hard issue to resolve quickly.
I think it's also that a flat credit really doesn't reflect the fact that some projects are very large projects but have large value created by them.
Right.
It probably deserves a different look than this.
Okay, Mr. Acosta?
No, I was going to mention the same thing. I think we're trying to set a fee where we don't have enough information to really set it correctly. And I think your suggestion about just stripping it and coming back to it when we have, I mean, it really is a matter of public benefit. And that, you know, governmental buildings, you know, if it was just to serve the staff, is much different than, you know, something that would offer kind of broader public benefit to, say, the people who live in the neighborhood around it. And so you have to view that in that context, and how you set the fee should reflect that. So federal building may or may not do that. A city hall may or may not do that if it decides to locate on a piece of property next to a metro station. So trying to set this fee is kind of a hard thing to do on the spot. So I would just
say going forward, do you want to? Would it be best that you frame that into an amendment?
I think, and Ms. O'Keefe can and others can chime in, but perhaps, you know, the government connections, number two says it'll be negotiated on a case-by-case basis on terms and conditions tailored. So if we, in three, remove the sentence that says the cost of Metro staff project review time and the sentence that follows, then it's just part of the negotiation at that point, and do the same thing in four, remove the last two sentences. Does that, so the last two sentences go in three and in four?
Chairman?
Ms. McKay?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to go down the same path because, again, as I said before, what we're talking about here is how we treat government entities, not private developers. What's prompting this to be discussed today is the private developer piece. So we either need to move forward with that piece separately, because it is time sensitive, and come back to a policy decision about how we deal with how much of a fee we want to waive for government entities, or we need to adopt a policy today that removes the dollar figure and goes back to item two, which is negotiated on a case-by-case basis. So you could strike the dollar figures out of three and four and say may, instead of our waive, may be waived, consistent with principle two, on a case-by-case basis on terms and conditions tailored to the individual case, including compensation to Metro where appropriate. I mean, you have to do one of those two things in my mind. You either have to take out all of the government-related stuff and bring that back as a separate resolution, or you have to change the dollar figure to say it's negotiated on a case-by-case basis, which we could always come back and change later if we determine what a magic dollar figure ought to be. And always come back and change that. But what my fear is, what I don't want to see happen, is we don't fix what got us to this table, the necessity of fixing the private piece, because that doesn't seem to be in dispute around the table. And so I think what we need help and guidance from staff or the general counsel on is which of those two options is better. Is it better to change the language, remove the dollar fee, and say negotiate on a case-by-case basis, or is it better to approve a resolution that only applies to private development entities and then come back and deal with the entire government piece later?
That's a question to General Counsel?
Yes.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Because this whole discussion is supposed to be about connection fees. And I think we talked about connection fees, and I'm fine with everything we said on connection fees. And then suddenly this review fee thing popped up, and I certainly hadn't thought about it or realized that we had a limit on it. Is the review fee piece intricately linked to the connection fee, or can we just be silent on the review fee, come back to whether there's a cap on it or not, or does that have to be part of the connection fee?
Hey, it's a reframing of Mr. McKay's question, yes. And who would like to answer that?
Well, let me try to move this along. There's, I think, on a temporary basis, unless Carol O'Keefe shoots me, I think we can remove the specific number for the connection fee and say on a case-by-case basis. But that's not the solution.
It's review time.
You review. Yeah, I'm sorry.
We
review.
Need to all be
yes.
careful what
yeah,
we're talking
review.
About.
That's fine on a temporary basis, but I think it's incumbent on us, staff, to come back to you, getting back to what Tommy said before about setting principles, because by doing this, we are putting staff in a very difficult position. I got to go negotiate with one county, and there's, you know, they may be very tough on, they don't want to pay any, you know, review fees, and then I got to come back to the board, and I don't need you involved in all that kind of stuff. So I'd say on a temporary basis, remove the fee, but we'll try to come back as quickly as possible with some kind of principles. I don't know what they are at the moment. I don't know what we're going to come up with, to then amend this subsequently. So staff is given firmer guidance, and the board is behind it.
So my understanding is that for now, we move forward with a form of amendment that captures what Ms. Hines was saying in terms of pulling out
those two sentences.
Okay, can you summarize for me what that is, please?
Ms. Hines?
Sure. On page 16 in number 3, we would remove at the last line, starting with the cost of Metro staff project review time and continuing to the end of that number 3. And then in number 4, I believe we would basically start with if the proposed connection is linked. We would remove that last two sentences. I'm a little concerned about that, actually. I wonder if we should just remove number 4.
Well, I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. McKay.
Yeah, I guess my concern is I thought we were going to use the language in item 2, because if you just strike that language in the interim, if there is a government entity that comes in, then you're removing the ability for WMATA staff to waive any of those fees. If you just take that clause out, then it's no longer there as an option. So I think I'm more comfortable going back to changing that to be consistent with item 2, which is they can be looked at on a case-by-case basis until such time as the general manager comes back with principles for which we specifically evaluate them. But I don't think we want to remove the opportunity while we're doing that entirely.
So, Mr. McKay, you're suggesting that at the top of page 17, any connection fees for government entities may be waived consistent with number 2. Basically,
yes.
That's what you're suggesting. So you remove the up to 50,000, insert that, and then cross out the last sentence.
Precisely. And
okay.
Then consistent with that in item 4 as well, where that same clause would have to be changed to be consistent.
But that would be with respect to the governmental share of a combined fee, where you would still seek to get it from the commercial side.
Exactly right.
Because this is only in the
pertaining to the government
fees. This only
fees.
Pertains to government.
But we're down here, it's a shared project with both government and commercial, and the goal would be to recover from the commercial side, right, potentially waive from the governmental side.
Right.
According to the allocation.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But again, that would be consistent with evaluating on a case-by-case basis that formulation.
On the governmental.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to try that. It seems like there's a general sense we really want to move forward to give you what you need today, but we're going to try to get some language today that gets us there. And so if you have language, let's come back and try to nail that down. And so who's closer here, Mr. McKay or Ms. Hines, to giving us actual language?
Do you want me to do it, Jeff? I think I know what you were suggesting.
Yeah,
okay.
That's fine.
So the sentence on page 16, at the bottom of page 16, would now read, the cost of Metro staff project review time and any connection fees for government entities may be waived so long as they are to be consistent with number 2 above. And then on number 4, if the proposed connection is linked to a joint public-private development on public property, the cost for Metro staff review time and the connection fee will be prorated according to relative interest in the development, with the government entity's share waived to be consistent with number 2 above. And then the last sentence is removed for in both cases.
Can I ask for a clarification on that? Does that mean that that you're giving the staff the ability either to waive nothing or everything, or is there some understanding that they could waive part of it?
It basically, that's being consistent with 2 means it can be negotiated on a case-by-case basis.
Clarification,
It's
an automatic staff waiver.
Right.
Would be a recommendation that comes forth for them in paragraph 6.
So that would mean that until we resolve this limitation issue, we're going to see every single waiver.
Well, just to be clear, though.
No, we don't.
This only covers certain projects. Like, this does not cover the Rosslyn project, because that's a station improvement.
Well, it's already in process.
And it's in process, but it's a different, we've already heard that this policy does not relate to the Rosslyn project. So it's not every project. It's the projects that come in with this narrow, with this category. And so, with that, who has their hand up? Mr. Nichols?
Just a couple of questions, I mean, or observations. I'm concerned about not knowing what the unintended consequences are, and there may not be any, but we have a set of specific projects going on out there right now that need policy guidance for you to be able to do your job. We need to get that and do it quickly. But we also know that this is not a comprehensive solution to the issues that you have to deal with on a daily basis. And I'd like for us to have a clear sense of when we can get to the remaining pieces of the questions. And frankly, all you can do is propose and we pontificate, so it's not necessarily a problem that you can solve. We'll have to make decisions as a board. I just want to know that when we'll get to the point where we can get all of these issues comprehensively resolved. And by making this policy decision today, which we need to make a decision, does that create a precedent for other projects that we can't fix quickly enough, or does it create a problem for us in other negotiations that will be coming up, or is this something that doesn't create a
Mr. Nichols, you're approaching four questions at once.
I'm sorry. You can choose any of them you want to have an answer. It's okay.
Matt?
You answered four questions with one answer. That's great.
Yeah. All right. I'm about to take this amendment and then allow for discussion. Ms. Hudgens?
He didn't ask the other one, more specifically. What's the time frame that you can come back? Because I think we don't want to – we're not trying to create something that will labor and cause confusion. But are you able to come back?
We'll be back in September.
Okay.
Hines, I'm going to take your amendment as a...
As a motion.
As a motion.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
All right. Discussion on the amendment. There being no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ayes have it. And now on the overall proposal. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. Thank you very much. The remainder of the agenda just goes over what other action items that we will be dealing with. Thank you very much for putting those in there so that we can all be prepared for that. In relation to our jurisdictions, I expect everyone to look at that so you know what's coming up. Any other business before? Mr. Downs?
I would like to take the general manager up on his offer to do a review of the board's policy on reimbursable project framing as we look forward and we recognize that we made a lot of stupid, short-sighted decisions about station configurations. One elevator when we probably should have had two station entrances when we probably, or one station entrance when we probably should have had two platform configurations that are way over, that are now being utilized way over capacity, the system probably demands a relook at what is truly a regional set of improvements about the built plant going forward. And I think that needs to be part of our future planning process. It needs to be part of our capital planning process. Leaving them as reimbursables makes all of that improvement of our rail system an orphan in this process of priority setting, or only gets improvements made on a station-by-station basis when there is a development opportunity. And that's the wrong thing for approaching this as a system that needs system-wide improvement over the next 20 years.
Okay, with that, there being no further business before the committee, this committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.